Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It's Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, where we're having a beautiful, beautiful spring day. And today we're going to talk about indoor air quality, and specifically about testing the indoor air in your home and what you might find out from doing that, why you might want to do that, what are some common indoor air quality problems. And my guest today is Will Spates. He's the president of Indoor Environmental Technologies, and he's right here in Clearwater, Florida. I've known him for a long time, and he does such inspections, so he's going to tell us all about it. Hi, Will.
Hi, how are you doing, Deborah?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good. Isn't it a beautiful day here?
Yes, it is.
Lots of sunshine and lots of flowers. So you've been doing indoor environmental inspections for more than 30 years, and at the time you started, that wasn't a very well-known thing to do. How did you get interested in this subject?
I moved into a home that I had purchased, and I started having allergy symptoms. At the time, I was in the Merchant Marine, and I was spending a lot of my time at sea, and I ended up having to start taking allergy shots. And when I left on my first trip after moving into this home, within a week of being at sea, all of my symptoms went away. I came back about 3 months later, and they returned. I looked at the house and said, I'm getting rid of the carpeting. I don't like this gas furnace. It's 30 years old. It needs to be changed out. And started making some changes in it. And then I got tired of going to sea, and I figured I was going to start a business creating healthy buildings.
That's very good. And tell us something about the history of indoor air problems, indoor air quality as a field. I remember when I first started writing my books and looking at toxics, there actually wasn't a field of indoor air quality. So how did that come to happen?
Well, the term sick building syndrome and building-related illness started to enter into mainstream, I would say, in the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And, we started, building very energy-efficient homes in the 70s after the first energy crunch. And we wanted to reduce our demands on, fossil fuels and, our energy costs. And, my approach to this is build tight, ventilate right, and use healthy materials. And what we had was we were building very tight. We weren't ventilating at all. And we were using a lot of manufactured materials that contained a lot of volatile organic compounds, formaldehyde being one of the most common ones. That was what I was noticing. When the articles that I was reading seemed to indicate that we were lacking ventilation in residential homes, and it's required in commercial buildings. So it's basically a using materials that can impact our health and then not having a way of ventilating them at the time that we're using them. So it just gets to be an issue, and we're recirculating the same air over and over again, and that's not a healthy situation.
Yeah, I remember at that time when energy efficiency changed everything, and when I started writing, it was just about that time where they were talking about chemicals building up in newly energy efficient buildings and homes, and then that started to be called indoor air quality, started to be a field, whereas before it wasn't, because people lived in leaky houses where there was air exchange going on between the indoors and outdoors through all those little cracks that got filled up so that we could save on energy, and then it became a toxic problem. But I think that it was a blessing in disguise, because all those toxic chemicals were there before, but nobody was paying attention to them, and then the cracks got filled, and you started seeing that they were building up and there, and that we needed to do something about it. So before... Good. Yeah. Before we start talking about what you do exactly, would you just give us a little bit of an overview of the problems that happen in indoor air for people who aren't familiar with that?
Deborah, I think I have a sort of a bad connection. Could you repeat that question again, please?
Yeah, and you know what? During the break, we'll reconnect in a few minutes. But I will repeat the question because I'm getting a lot of static on my end. The question is, before we start talking about what you do, would you give us just an overview of what typical indoor air quality problems are?
Well, if I understand you correctly, the air quality problems that we're finding in homes are pretty much the result of just unconscious construction and bringing, you know, materials into our homes that aren't healthy to begin with. The fire retardants that they apply to pretty much every textile that comes into a home, the formaldehyde that they use as binders and building materials, whether from medium density fiberboard to, you know, the rebound carpeting pad, you know, underneath your carpeting, all contribute to these. And, you know, we need to exercise a level of conscious construction and conscious decision making in, you know, what we bring into our homes.
So typical
question.
Well, what are some of the typical pollutants that you find, like gases and particles and molds and things like that?
Well, yeah, the testing, it depends on how technical you want the testing to be. Right now we're doing a lot of inspections on homes that have had spray foam insulation applied in order to make their homes more energy efficient and reduce their energy bills. But unfortunately, not all spray foams are created equal or applied, you know, with the same level of care that they should be, according to the manufacturer. And this has resulted in some very toxic homes that actually require healthy people to have to move out of them. And I've got an inspection tomorrow where, you know, this is a legal situation. And we're doing some very expensive testing using some of the best labs in the country. And, you know, figuring out, hold on just a second here.
Okay.
Yeah, figuring out what's going on in there and establishing a baseline. And then once we know what the baseline is, we know what the air exchange rates are in the home. We can figure that out by using a blower door test and checking the ductwork to make sure that that's not leaking and drawing air in from the attic where, you know, the spray foam is located. We come up with a mitigation strategy in order to try to bring this out back into balance again. And after that's implemented, then we perform post-remediation testing to see if the outside air that's coming in is diluting it enough so that, you know, we're at what we would consider a slight to no anomaly range according to the building biology standards that I reference.
And so, that sounds like it's a, that would be an unusual situation where somebody would have that kind of, that toxic of insulation kind of problem. But what are some of the things that would be more, like that people would find in a typical house?
Okay. Are you familiar with the lumber liquidators challenge that's going
Yes.
on out there right now?
Yeah. Tell us more about that.
Okay. I did an inspection on that yesterday. The flooring was installed 3 years ago. It's in a very tight home, but the family is also very healthy oriented, and they do open the windows as much as they can, and they do have two young children. I would say 80% of their home is covered in, you know, a brand of the lumber liquidator St. James laminate flooring that has been implicated in this 50-minute, you know, expose.
We need to go to break, but we'll hear more about this after the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Will Spates. He's the president of Indoor Environmental Technologies. here in Clearwater, Florida, and his website is ietbuildinghealth.com. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Will Spates, president of Indoor Environmental Technologies, and his website is ietbuildinghealth.com. So, Will, before the break, you were telling us about an inspection that you did on a house that had lumber liquidators flooring in it.
Yes,
so what did you find?
Where we were going with this was I did the inspection yesterday, and they had it over most of their home. It's a three-story townhome, and the floor was installed about 3 years ago. And the woman saw our blog on the internet, and also an interview that I was in related to this subject. That is also on our blog, and gave us a call. And she was very concerned. She has a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and we went out there. And fortunately, I was able to tell her that the levels for formaldehyde were in the slight to no anomaly range, meaning that there really wasn't any concern, and they were doing the right thing by ventilating. She asked me, well, what would it have been like when my children were born and, 2 or 3 years ago? And I said, I really can't speak to that. And there's also other many forms of formaldehyde-containing materials in a home. But we do have the tools to make this invisible world visible. We can sample for pretty much any type of analyte out there with what I've learned over the last 25 years. And the technologies have improved dramatically, where we can, sample down to tenths of a part per billion of VOCs for some compounds. And it really is becoming a much more refined science. And we can put names on things and make the invisible world visible to us, and then come up with strategies on how to minimize our exposure.
I like that, the way you say, make the visible world, invisible world visible. Oh, and now I'm having trouble with my sound here. Okay. Oh, they just fixed it. All right. So I like the way you say making the invisible world visible, because it is all these pollutants, whether they're particles or gases, they are invisible. We can't see them. And so it's always good to be able to see, for you to be able to tell us what's going on with it. Why would somebody call you as an inspector? What would prompt them to do that?
They usually have a concern about their indoor environment, whether it's related to mold and moisture. We've had a very damp last couple of years. We've had over 15 inches of rain since November at my house, here in Clearwater. And that's unheard of. This is supposed to be our dry season. And it's not been hot enough to cool. It hasn't been cold enough to heat, so the air conditioning systems don't run long enough. The humidity builds up into the homes to the 60-70% level. Homes become very clammy, and they start supporting mold growth, and this makes people sick. And they call us and say, I don't know what it is, but, this has never happened before, but I've got mold growing on my walls behind my sofa against the wall. And I ask them if it's an exterior wall, and they say yes, and I know exactly what's going on, and they need to go to Lowe's or Home Depot and pick up a supplemental dehumidifier and bring the humidity levels down. And then they need to clean their house very thoroughly. And, that's one aspect. Another aspect, could be a remodeling using, they just brought in new cabinets and, say, new flooring, carpeting. And they move in and, their eyes burn. This would be a chemical issue rather than a moisture control issue. And, so depending on the symptoms, we come up with a proposal for investigation, and based on our findings in the investigation, then we make our recommendations how to improve the environment.
That's very good. So what are some of the different things that you look at when you go into a home?
Baseline indoor environmental quality inspection, we measure total volatile organic compounds, and we have equipment where we can measure this on-site. We have real-time measurement equipment that's calibrated, and we can measure down to the parts per billion for total volatile organic compounds. We can measure using another system called the Dräger method, over 300 different analytes specifically, and I use the Dräger method for the formaldehyde testing within homes. where we can measure down to 0.02 parts per million, or 20 parts per billion, which is pretty low. Some of the particles, we use a laser particle counter to measure respirable dust 0.5 microns and larger. And we're worried about the smallest particles because they're the ones that can penetrate deepest into our lungs. We measure the supply air coming out of their air conditioning system and then measure the ambient. And if the supply air isn't reduced by about 50%, we know their filtration isn't working properly. And, then we measure room climate for temperature and humidity. We know what a healthy home, room climate should be like and where 80% of the population feels it to be comfortable. And we use those as our references. And, we take air samples for mold and particulates. And then we analyze these at our in-house lab under a microscope. And we can tell the particles whether they're, if there's fiberglass being released from their air conditioning system. These air samples, when we're looking at them under a microscope, we can actually see whether the house was close to the sea or not because of the salt crystals that are in the air from the sea spray. And after looking at thousands of air samples, you get a feeling for what's normal and what isn't.
As you're talking, I'm just getting this picture of that there's so much more in the air than any of us, except inspectors like you, ever even think about. You know, that we basically think maybe there's some dust, maybe there's some chemical gases, maybe there's carbon dioxide from breathing out, is there enough oxygen? But I think that most people aren't thinking about their indoor air quality on a daily basis at all.
Yeah, I would say, we live in an enclosed environment. We spend 90% of our time in our cars or in our houses. Those special few that do get outside and exercise on a regular basis, more power to them. But, the average is 90% of your time indoors. And we just want to make it as healthy as possible. We want to use conscious construct techniques. We want to make wise choices on what we bring into our homes. We want to take the same level of responsibility for our homes as we do for maintaining our car. You'll change out your tires and you'll change the oil, but people will completely ignore their air conditioning system, which is the lungs of their home.
I like that. The air conditioning is the lungs of your home. We need to go to break, but we'll talk more about this when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lundad, and my guest today is Will Spates, President of Indoor Environmental Technologies. And his website is ietbuildinghealth.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Will Spates, President of Indoor Environmental Technologies, and he's at ietbuildinghealth.com. Will, there's a whole field called building science, and I'm sure that my listeners have no idea what that is. Can you explain that?
Sure. Thank you, Deborah. Building science is a term that has been around for about 15, 20 years, and it is it's the conscious approach to creating an indoor environment that has not only the way a building works, but also the way that people react to the inside of the building, when they're in these. It's the interaction between the people and the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And, building science has a lot to do with building pressures, with ventilation rates, with air exchange. When you go into a hospital, you use different building science techniques to, isolate certain areas of the hospital from others through building pressures. In office environments, you're required to bring in so much outside air per person. And there are standards for these. The American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers creates standards. These are not, codes or, requirements, but they are best practices. And in the course of building homes, building science has been left out, unfortunately. You know, yes. They applied very well to commercial buildings, but not to residential environments.
But it should be, building science should be applied to homes as well. I mean, this is something that I am totally not trained at, but I've been doing home inspections myself. I mean, I don't do anything like what you do. But, well, I will just say the difference between what I do and what Will does is that I can go into a home or an office or a workplace and I can identify, toxic chemicals that may be in the products that are being used or in the building materials simply because I can recognize them and I know what the toxic chemicals are. There's no measuring involved. There's a term called organoleptic sensing, which means that you can smell something and identify it, or you could have a reaction to it and identify it, where you're using the senses of your body to find out that something's there. What Will does is that he has these very expensive sensitive instruments that he goes in and will give you measurements. And I remember some years ago, I don't know, it's been like 10 years now or something, you came to my house and you took a measurement with one of your instruments about, I think it was VOCs. Do you remember?
I'm trying to remember this.
And
you were doing some remodeling, I believe, at the time.
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think, if I remember correctly, there wasn't a problem in my house. There was nothing that I needed to fix.
If I recall correctly, it was a rather older home.
It is.
And, older homes used more basic materials. I have a home that was built in the 50s, and it's basically concrete block, plaster walls, and exterior stucco, and with a barrel tile roof and a vented attic, and it's very, very healthy.
I have a very healthy house, too. I mean, mine was built in the 40s, and mine is not... mine is just regular wood construction, and I live in older homes for exactly this reason, because I have hardwood floors, I've got plaster walls, you know, there's not a bit of particle board in this house. There are none of the new materials, and, you know, it's just, I'm very happy here. And when Will came in with his instruments, there wasn't anything to measure, you know, it was just, there's no formaldehyde, it's just nothing. So it was a really interesting experience to have Will come, because I could see that all the decisions that I had made about what I put in my house were all working to have it be a very clean house. So after having started out with just looking at materials and using my knowledge to be able to identify things that are toxic, then along came this thing called building science. And I think it's a really interesting thing. I mean, people need to be trained in it, obviously. But for me, it's about the whole relationship between the air coming in and the air going out, and how that affects what the indoor air quality is. And there's a lot of science behind it. And I think that all buildings should be built with building science, that it should all be considered, and that it can certainly, somebody like you could come in to a residential building and retrofit it. I don't know if that's the right word, but you could make those adjustments for building good building science after the fact. Yes,
I do this all the time, Deborah. You know, we go in and we make recommendations, and we, you know, one of our recommendations is that they introduce outside air, filter it, and dehumidify it, and tie it into the supply air of their air conditioning system. It's a freestanding system. You can maintain 50% humidity and bring in 150 CFM of outside air, you know, 1 hour of every 4 hours. That's 6 hours of fresh air coming into your home every day, but it's filtered and it's conditioned, so it's not the humidity and the heat that we have from outside.
Right.
And it's great. And I want to get back to your level of inspection before we go on. You do a wonderful job of dealing with people and their perceptions. And my instruments are never going to be as sensitive as some of my most sensitive clients. and I might not be able to detect anything, and yet it's still an issue for them. And they, you know, they'll say it's coming right out of these cabinets, and we'll send a piece of the cabinet shelf off to a chamber, off to a lab to have a chamber analysis done and to see what the emissions are, similar to what the lumber liquidators are supposed to do with their flooring to see what the emissions are coming off of that, what VOCs are coming off. And, you know, they come back normal, but yet the people are still having a reaction. And the best recommendation we can make is to introduce outside air, and then through dilution, we reduce the concentrations.
Yes, I think that that's something that people don't know that they can do. Like, I know that I can open the window. I just had a situation at my house where somebody came in who fully knew that they shouldn't, but somebody came in just accidentally having washed their, somebody else washed their clothes in a detergent. And, oh, we need to go to break. I'll tell my story when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Will Spates, president of Indoor Environmental Technologies, and he's at IETBuildingHealth.com. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Will Spates, president of Indoor Environmental Technologies at IETBuildingHealth.com. So what we were talking about before the break was ventilation and the importance of remembering that we can always use ventilation. And I had a friend come in who was wearing clothes that somebody else had washed in, I'm going to say this brand name because this fragrance is so horrible, Tide HE, specifically for HE, and it has extra downy fabric softener added to it. And I don't usually mention brand names like that, but I am having a very difficult time removing this from his clothing. And it just smelled up the whole house. I just, 10 minutes in the house, everything smelled like this detergent. And so I just went around opening all the windows and gave him something else to wear and started the process of decontaminating his clothes. And, but we forget that we can open the window. We forget that there are very many technical things that you can advise us of, Will, of what we can do to bring more ventilation into our homes while still retaining the heating or cooling. There's so much new technology about this now than there was 30 years ago. And I think that most people just aren't even aware it's there for their benefit.
Yeah, that we have a lot of information on our website and on our blog as far as reference to the ASHRAE 622 standards for ventilation rates for residential homes, which is, it's been out there for, I think since about 2003, and yet it's not implemented. You know,
yeah.
It's people just don't want to spend the extra $1,500 to, you know, create, you know, a properly functioning air conditioning system. And but if you have a commercial building, you have to bring in outside air. It's required by law.
Yeah. It's so interesting how regulations of various types are inconsistent across the boards. And this isn't the only one. But anyway, this is one. So I want to make sure that we talk about new construction because people can hire you before they even build so that you can implement these building science things in their new construction. And you can also go and inspect homes before people buy them. So tell us more about those.
Well, I've had some wonderful clients over the years and have been using the building biology precepts to work as an owner's agent in the construction of their homes, and they wanted the healthiest home possible. And we had the first, you know, really healthy home ever published and documented in the state of Florida back in 1999 up in the Jacksonville, Ponte Vedra Beach area. It's a beautiful home right on the Atlantic Ocean, and it was a a wonderful experience for me. I got a chance to work with the architect and the builder and the homeowner, and all four of us came together and worked as a team and created a masterpiece. It was really exciting. And then about 5 years ago, I did another home down in Sarasota. It was the first LEED Platinum residential home, and National Home Builders Association Emerald Award, and you know, it had more credentials than than you could imagine. And it was another great project working with a wonderful team of people. You know, the whole LEED certification process is a whole nother depth, and it just is very stringent and requires air quality standards, building material standards, using local materials, you know, recycling your yard waste into your, you know, landscaping, and all of these types of things for, you know, the various awards that we got. And that, again, Deborah, it gets back to conscious construction. How can we make our yard and our home, you know, have the lightest, you know, impact on the world that we live in? We want it to be healthy. We want it to support, you know, the wildlife and contribute to the well-being of the planet.
Yes, I think all of our actions should support the well-being of life, whether it's our own bodies or the environment that supports our bodies or our communities, our families. It should all be life supportive. And you're certainly doing that with your work. So if somebody, obviously somebody in Clearwater, Florida, or the surrounding area could hire you, but if somebody were looking for somebody like you in their local area, what would they look for and how would they find someone?
They would go to just Google building biology, and you know, it's based on the German discipline Baubiologie. It started in Germany in the 60s, and you know, our mutual friend who has since passed away, Helmut Zia, you know, was my mentor in this and a very dear friend, and some of the best friends, you know, that I have today, I've met through this organization, and they're colleagues of mine now, and we're all over the country, actually all over the world.
Yes.
And, you know, so Baubiology is a great resource. Another good resource is the Indoor Air Quality Association, IAQA, and you're looking for the designation of somebody with a certified indoor environmental consultant designation. That means that they've passed a rather stringent proctored test, maintaining continuing education credits, you know, because the industry is constantly changing, and is maintaining adequate insurance and, you know, to be able to demonstrate due diligence in their work. You know, you can't take a 3-day course and call yourself an expert. You know, this is it's a lifestyle and a career commitment, and it needs to have more regulation in it out there.
Well, I can certainly, I know you've been doing this more than 30 years, and I know from my own experience that the longer that I do something, you just start learning things from experience that somebody who doesn't have the experience can't possibly know, because it's not something that comes from textbooks. It comes from being out there in the field, seeing what's going on, being able to sense things and putting two and two together and all those kinds of things. So I really appreciate your experience, and I think that that's something that people need to look for, as somebody who's well-trained and also well-experienced, because you're going to pick up things that people who aren't experienced won't even know about.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we've done over 7,000 inspections since 1992 when I opened my doors, you know, to do this type of work. And, you know, we have large commercial clients that use us to maintain their campuses, you know, all over the Southeast U.S. and the Caribbean. And, you know, financial institutions. We work with a lot of realtors. We do a lot of pre-purchase real estate inspections, so people aren't buying into an environmental nightmare that is going to, you know, have a negative impact on their health. And, you know, it's it's a right action process. I really love what we're doing. I feel we're helping people, and we're helping them to make informed decisions. We're giving them the information they need to know whether the home or the building that they're looking at is what it's going to take to make it healthy. And then they can make the decision on whether it's worth it or not as far as their investment goes. And it's not just your normal home inspection where does the washer and dryer work and, does the air conditioning blow cold. This is moisture mapping. This is air sampling. This is getting under the crawl space if it has one and trying to figure out how healthy can this building be. And is it going to be worth their while to make the investment?
Do you have information on your website, educational material that people should go look at that would help them understand more about what you do?
Our website has a lot of information, but we don't offer any classes or anything like that. I would highly recommend the Building Biology Association. They have seminars all the time that teach people to be environmental consultants, and that was my first certification back in 1993, was becoming a BBEC, and I was on the board of directors for years and an instructor with them for years, but I've stepped back, and I'm slowing down a little bit, and I've got a real good crew here working with me that go out and do most of the jobs, and I try to sit back and relax a little bit more and just maintain the business.
I totally understand. I do want to just mention that I'm looking at his website right now, and there's a very good page here about common indoor air pollution, pollutants, and health, and that just is a really good summary. And just, I think if you go to the site and just kind of look around, you'll get some ideas for different things. Well, we've come to the end of our time. Thank you so much, Will. I think we've all learned a lot, and it's great that there's a whole field out there of what you're doing, you and others, that can be reducing toxic exposure in people's homes by testing and then having a solution for them. So, Will is at IETBuildingHealth.com. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. And you can go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com to find out about the show and listen to other guests. Be well.